The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Okay, welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show, excuse me, with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can tune in once again, and I want to remind you, just because we talk about certain tax strategies or perhaps certain investment opportunities that are out there, please don't go avail yourself of those just yet. Check with your existing advisors, make sure that what you heard was accurately portrayed, and that further that it might fit your current facts and circumstances. And for those of you that don't have advisors that consult in the real estate taxation space or the retirement plan deployment of funds space, planning for zero tax bracket as you reach retirement age, then feel free to go to our website at beaplannershow.com and complete the forms that you will find at the forms link that's just below the title to the right of the page. And at least step one will get us enough information where we can have a call with you, which you can schedule from the call link, and we'll try to tell you if or how we can help you sync up with us, or we can help you sync up with your objectives in terms of creating retirement wealth or near-term wealth. Just depends on your facts and circumstances and what you have to work with. And beyond that, we will help you assess any tax planning strategies that might work currently, especially if you're a small business owner. And in any event, we would welcome the chance to take a look at what you're faced with and see how we might be of help. Speaking of the BAPlannerShow.com website, if you will go to the resources tab along the top right, you will see that we have a news page under that tab. And as we do every show, we use the news cycle to illustrate or to explain certain topics that we deal with in the tax and real estate investing arena. And let's see, I'm running a little behind getting there. My connection is giving me a problem here. Let me see if I can get there so I can have access to my articles. Well, technology is wonderful when it works. Let's see, let's try this again. Well, let's see. I don't actually need to touch base on articles just yet. I can talk about a couple of other topics that actually were on the list of articles that I had. I think I'm near enough and dear enough with some of these topics I can handle them on my own. The Roth, I had a couple articles today that I pulled off of Charles Schwab's site on Roth conversion, and I guess I would be talking about Roth conversions with or without Charles Schwab. The only reason I pulled the articles they had is they distinguish between why you might select a Roth IRA versus a traditional IRA, and you know, there's a number of reasons, but I'll tell you the overriding reason to pick a Roth these days or to convert to a Roth that I can think of is because the tax rates are going to go up. And I know I had a client just yesterday make the comment that, well, you know, I've been hearing tax rates were going to go up for my entire life. And in any event, I told her, I said, well, yeah, I agree. And that was before I truly understood the limiting factors to our budget. And it's not necessarily taxes that limit our annual fiscal budget. It's how much we can borrow, because we have a Congress that insist on borrowing. And, you know, this particular client was about the same age I am. She was a year older. I'm 64. And I told her, I said, I can tell you that ever since the early 80s, when I became a CPA, got out of University of Houston, and went to work at Arthur Anderson and I tax department, and I've been hearing for, that's 40 years now, literally 40 years, I've been hearing how tax rates have to go up. Well, the problem is the people that would opine in that area didn't factor in the fact that we could still borrow. And, you know, when you look back in the 80s, when we really first, or I first remember hearing about how taxes have to go up, we were, I don't know, 10, 15% of GDP in terms of our debt borrowing. And so there was still plenty of runway where Congress realized, oh, well, we can still go borrow. Let's just spend it and we'll go borrow it. And, you know, it's tragic how that mindset has now raised our debt to GDP ratio. It's inverted, if you want to call it that. We are at 100 and, well, we're north of 150%. Different economists have different percentages because they include assorted variables, different variables in the calculations. But suffice it to say, we are way over the 100% mark. If that's not a mark that necessarily should give us pause, I would suggest a much lower threshold should have given us pause. And yet, you watch, we will keep borrowing until we get out to 2029 and 30. We'll keep borrowing without reservation, is what I should have said, because we'll be able to quote, afford it. Well, when you no longer have any discretionary budget remaining of our current level of tax receipts to pay 100% of the interest on the outstanding debt, that's when things are going to change. And what's going to happen, it'll kind of be like a vortex in a toilet when you flush it. Things are going to go fast, because when you can't pay 100% of the debt, all of a sudden, 100% of the interest on the debt, I'm sorry, all of a sudden, you're going to have to come up with higher interest rates to appeal to and attract those that will continue to loan money to the U.S. government. The full faith and credit of the U.S. government won't mean as much, but that's not to say we still won't be able to borrow any money. Obviously, we've got relationships where the folks that are buying our current treasury bills, treasury bonds, are owed so much by our government, I suspect there will be people that continue to feed the beast, so to speak, just so they don't go under in terms of the money that they're currently owed. But that's going to be to answer the question of those that say, well, you know, I've been hearing all my life tax rates will go up. That's when they're going to go up, if not sooner, as they should. That's the problem. None of us want to pay the piper. We all want to take advantage of these low tax rates, the lowest they've been in most of our lifetime. And I would tell you, yes, the way to take advantage of that is if you've got pre-tax retirement funds, 401s, IRAs, SEPs, etc., get them over to a Roth type of account. You can do a conversion. You pay the tax that's due. And there are a couple of five-year rules that you need to navigate. And absent that, you won't pay tax again on the income that gets created off that nest egg, and then you won't pay tax on the nest egg when you take that money out, again, presuming you're dealing with qualified distributions and the five-year rules that might apply. They do in most cases, unless you're an old person like myself. You get a pass on one of those. In any event, let's go ahead and take a break. I'm going to see if I can reestablish my connection here. And we'll be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama. Get to living, giving, don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at nprross.com. Nathan at nprross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
Okay, welcome back. to the second segment of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And as I mentioned, I'm fighting an internet connection issue, but thank goodness for cell phones. I can do what I need to do at this point on a phone. And in the meantime, I think I will shut my PC down and try starting it up again. Okay, let's go to the news page. The first article, a couple articles I pulled off of Redfin. Redfin's a big, it's a multifaceted real estate site. It's kind of a, I don't want to say it's a de facto MLS, but let's just say it gets probably almost as much traffic. And I notice that every time you list a unit or a home, it shows up. Most MLS systems, I guess, are tied into, you know, Zillow and other websites like Redfin, because the listings are almost instantly available on those sites. But in any event, there's an article that the title is, and it's the first one on our list this week, nearly 40% of homeowners couldn't afford their home if they were to buy it today. That's kind of scary, meaning that, you know, the prices have gone up that much to where if they had, you know, to be in the market right now, they wouldn't be able to afford it. And that's probably in large measure why there's not as many sellers willing to sell, although obviously if they can sell the one they're in and they've got a gain significantly, they can turn around and put that in to a new residence. But the point is, why risk that? You know, if you're sitting on a home that you like and you have it at a incredible mortgage rate, interest rate, you know, just continue to wait. And I think in large measure why the supply of homes has dropped so markedly against the demand. And of course, the demand may not be as strong as it would be otherwise, because we've gotten spoiled. You know, it's 7% interest rate isn't anything that we find appealing, even though, as I've said before on the show, that if you look historically at what the interest rates have been on mortgages, you would find that 7 to 8% is the average over a long period of time. So, you know, we're spoiled. And I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't say it on the last segment, but when I was talking about converting to Roth, take advantage of the fact that the tax brackets or tax rates are on sale right now. Never been lower in most of our lifetimes. And you're not, I'm going to suggest you won't have this opportunity much longer because of the math that's involved. And that's the key reason why I know we've been hearing forever that tax rates have to go up, et cetera, et cetera. They never do, or they never have, really. I'm going to tell you, it's math now. It's not political affiliation or anything else. And if you don't understand that, you know, hey, who am I? You will understand it come 2028, 29, 30, somewhere in there, because we will run out of the remaining portion of the discretionary budget. And I think at that point, one of two things is going to happen. The taxes should go up before then to help avert part of the crisis, but there's a couple other things that are going to happen. The government will stop paying for some things that we pay for now because there won't be the money to do so. And as an example, Social Security will be cut. If we don't fix the problem with Social Security Trust Fund, the fund will be out of money by 2034 is the current projection. And there will be, by law, it's already baked into the current statute, there will be a 23 and 25% across the board cut on your Social Security. And again, it's not Democrat, it's not Republican, it's the math of how fast the trust fund with Social Security, and Medicare is even sooner. I'm not sure how much across the board will get cut, but the Medicare funds run out. I want to say it's in 26, 27, somewhere in there, Medicare and Medicaid. And so there's got to be some serious systemic policy changes is what's going to be required. And I would suggest that we're probably already too late, but better late than never. It would mean that whatever gets cut doesn't get cut to the same extent, perhaps. Nobody wants to pay taxes. I get that. But for those of you that in the middle or upper middle class that think, well, you know, we just need to tax those rich people, you know, all you investors buying passive owner interest in these real estate private partnership syndications, y'all just need to pay more taxes. It's not fair that you get distributions out of your syndicated investments without paying tax, because distributions are not taxable income. And most real estate projects in the multifamily arena don't generate taxable profits until you sell. Why? Because we get write-offs, you know, depreciation, the mortgage interest on the loan, et cetera, that for the most part tend to cover our taxable income to where there's really little, if any, taxable income during the interim years in the partnership. So I know we speak a lot about why we like multifamily, because you know, everybody has to have a place to lay their head at night. And we like the fact that the value goes up based on the net operating income that can be generated. And, you know, as a CPA, I really try not to focus on the tax rules. I know everybody else does, all my non-CPA prognosticator brethren and ladies. They find the tax angle to be so intriguing. And I guess I'm kind of jaundiced at the tax benefits. I just assume they're always going to be there because we're in business. And businesses are given the bulk of the shelter under the current tax code and have for a long time. It's not the W-2 high income earning couple. No, it's the little guy, the mom and pop that's out there running an apartment building or a consulting practice, maybe a sole practitioner, lawyer, or accountant. That's who has the benefit of the business deductions under the current Internal Revenue Code, and it's been that way for a while. But in the passive syndication investment seat, if that's where you're seated and that's what you're doing, first of all, congratulations, you win the prize for being astute and understanding how to work smarter, not harder. Why would you want to be the one to get out of bed every morning and go run a beat up old Class C apartment that you're making beautiful and trying to reconstitute the tenant base therein and get your NOI up by making the property more current amenitized like the new properties are, so you can charge higher rents. And let's let the utes, the younger folk, get out of bed every morning, go out and do that. Let's provide the capital, which those lead partners are providing capital too. Don't think they're getting a pass, although once they've been to the finish line more than a few times, they may get a pass if they want it. Most of the syndicators I know would rather invest in their own transaction than perhaps anybody else's. Why wouldn't they? Why would they be asking you to invest if they didn't have the confidence to put their own funds in? And in fact, I would argue you might consider staying out of a transaction that you would otherwise consider if the syndicator wasn't putting their own money into the deal. But in any event, let's see here. Go back to my list of articles. So anyway, Redfin did a poll, 3,000 U.S. residents earlier this year, February. And they focused on 1,988 respondents who indicated they are homeowners. The relevant question was, if you were looking to purchase a home, do you think you could afford a home like yours in your neighborhood today? Excuse me. And it said nearly 3 in 5 homeowners who answered this question have lived in their home for at least 10 years. And another 20% have lived in their home for at least 5 years. That means the majority of the respondents have seen housing prices in their neighborhood skyrocket since they purchased their home. The median U.S. home sale price has doubled in the past 10 years and has shot up nearly 50% in the last 5 years alone. And don't think for a minute that's all just appreciation based on your home being more valuable. No, there's a lot of inflation baked in. And true, some of it is due to lack of supply. But in any event, home prices have soared over the last decade for several reasons, the article goes on. Already high home prices skyrocketed during the pandemic when remote work and ultra-low mortgage rates motivated many Americans to move and buy homes. Even before the pandemic buying boom, home prices were increasing due to a prolonged supply shortage, along with a strong labor market and growing population pushing up demand. And so in any event, the rising mortgage rates are simply another reason homeowners couldn't afford the home they're in now if they were to try to buy it today. And the typical, this is a crazy statistic, the typical person purchasing today's median priced home of $420,000 has a record high $2,864 monthly housing payment with a 7.1% mortgage rate, the current 30-year fixed rate average. If they were to purchase a home for the same price with a 4% mortgage rate, which was common in 2019, their monthly payment was roughly $650 a month less at $2,210. That's crazy. That's just crazy. Rising home prices are a double-edged sword. On the one hand, Americans who already own their homes benefit from rising values, as I mentioned earlier, and they can consider themselves lucky they broke into the housing market while they could still afford it, said Redfin senior economist Elijah De La Campa. On the other hand, price appreciation makes the prospect of buying a new home daunting or even impossible for many people who want to move. Prices have risen enough that a similar home and location would be much pricier than a home someone already owns, even accounting for inflation. So, again, I guess the moral of the story is be thankful for what you have, appreciate what you have, continue to plan and process the market data. You know, this too shall pass. You know, I look back over in my adult life, the real estate market in the Houston area from, you know, the first time I bought a home was in 1983, just out of college, and bought several over the next 10 years. And, you know, I think I had a 14% mortgage rate at one point. We thought we were lucky to get it because we were able to assume the rate of an existing loan. I know there were people paying 18 or 19% at the time. And there were also people paying 6 or 7% that we thought, man, are they lucky? You know, they were the old, my bosses, you know, at back in the day at Arthur Andersen. And I thought, wow, that would be incredible. You know, think of the home I could afford if I could get a mortgage like that. But anyway, well, let's go to the next article. Also a Redfin article. Home prices stagnate in Florida and Texas as supply soars. So, interesting, just as much as the last article was bemoaning the fact that there was a supply issue, here's a different vantage point. Even from the same platform, and this is what I've pointed out many times, just depends on which room. You know, we're all looking into the same room from a different window, and it's amazing how the view changes. In any event, let's see here. There were just a couple things I wanted to point out. The number of homes, a couple bullets up the top of this article, for sale in Cape Coral, Florida, and Northport, Florida, surged roughly 50% from a year earlier. March on March, March 23 to March 24, more than anywhere else in the country. And in McAllen, Texas, supply jumped 25%. Housing supply is soaring because both states have been building a lot of homes, which is limiting home price growth. Buyer demand is also lackluster because people are priced out. And in Florida, an insurance crisis is throwing a wrench into deals. Nationwide, listings slowed in March as mortgage rates remained elevated. The Fed recently warned rates are likely to stay high longer than expected. And I would suggest that that's certainly a lot of people's take now. When you look at the most recent jobs report, you look at the latest CPI information, rates are likely not going down anytime soon, nor, again, should you expect it when we're sitting right here at our historical average, at least mortgage rates. And I suspect it'll be a while before we see rate cuts. I'm thinking it's not even this year. I'm beginning to agree more with Jamie Dimon, the CEO of Chase Bank, who's saying that it's going to be a lot longer than we thought. This article goes on to say, of the 10 metro areas that posted the largest year-over-year increases in supply, six are in Florida, two are in Texas. Cape Coral saw the biggest jump in homes for sale, 51%, followed by Northport, Sarasota, 48%, Fort Lauderdale, 30%. And so on. McAllen, I mentioned, was at 25%. And, you know, Cincinnati is at the bottom of that list, 17%, which is a lot of homes given the mature nature of that market. Let's do this. We are sitting right on top of the second break point. Let's go ahead and take that break, and we'll circle back more with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones have made up my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I'm gonna win no matter how much.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. But I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we've been talking about several news articles, the state of the housing market. And I know some of my listeners will ask me each week, well, why do you bring up our residents as opposed to the apartment market or single family rentals, which we also do, but I would suggest to you that the roots of all, you know, adjustments in the market seem to start, or at least most people are more aware of their own real estate, including their residence, than they are about what the apartments across town might be experiencing. And we do talk about which markets have, you know, rental growth or negative rental growth, as the case may be, currently with some of the existing markets. But you know, I find it easy to identify with you know, residential situations. And I know you know, that invariably it all tracks back to what's going on with residential, you know, primary residence type real estate. You show me a market where apartment growth is significantly going up or going down, and the homes in the area that are primarily owner occupied is static. That doesn't happen. So I think it's easy to you know, use this to explain certain topics, but in any event, let's see here. I was looking for the article on Schwab that I have out there about Roth versus traditional, which is right for you. I wanted to finish my point. I was starting to say most planners are going to suggest to you that the biggest issue is they're going to put it off on you, by the way. They're going to say, well, do you think your tax rates are going to go up or down as you get into retirement? And I know where they're headed, because most planners think that your tax bracket is going to go down because you won't be making as much money. I look at our clients totally differently, because I see the money that people amass in their self-directed 401ks. And, you know, what people tend to forget is that at some point, whether they need the money to live on or not, they got to take required minimum distributions out of that fund. For most people, it's age 73, and, you know, it depends on circumstances as to when you start, etc. But you're looking at, on a, say, just a $750,000 account, you're looking at a amount of money that's, you know, roughly 28, I'm just ballparking it now, $28,000 to $30,000 a year, which, you know, that may not sound like much money, and frankly, it's not, but you know what it is enough money to do? It's enough money to cause you to owe tax on your Social Security. If you get up in the 30,000, 30, maybe 32, I've forgotten exactly where the line is on the provisional tax bracket, that's the amount of money that we can earn where the standard deduction, for the most part, will offset the tax that we would otherwise pay on Social Security or other income that doesn't have withholding on it. So once you exceed that $30,000, it's likely you'll work your way up to where you'll pay as much as 85% on your Social Security funds. You'll pay taxes on 85%. I shouldn't say it like it's 85% tax. It's not. But that said, it's you know, a scenario where your next door neighbor might not pay any tax because they arranged their affairs. They heard Nathan Ross talking about converting their pre-tax money to Roth on the radio one day and decided, you know what, I think that makes sense. And maybe they didn't even realize. And I'm going to tell you, because you're listening today, converting to Roth sidesteps this provisional tax bracket altogether on the Roth income. Doesn't go into that calculation on the provisional tax bracket. So you convert your funds over to Roth, and assuming again that you've seasoned the account, you've qualified it for the distributions that'll come out. And by the way, you can still take money out of your Roth even if you don't have the five-year rule met. If you're contributing, you're making new contributions to Roth, you can take the core, what I'm going to call principal, out anytime you want without paying tax on it. And you'll only pay tax if you take the earnings sliver out prior to the five-year period. And the way the ordering works, the priority, is your contributions are considered to come off first. So you may not ever, I mean, it depends on how much money you're seeking to take out, you may just work off the principal, the amount that you contributed. And of course, with the Roth, you don't get a deduction. So you've already paid tax on that money. And it may be enough, depending on how much you have in, which, by the way, are you aware that in the current year's tax year, you can contribute up to, I believe the correct number here, let me just confirm this, is $77,000 if you're an older person like myself. Let's see, 2024. 76.5, I'm sorry, or no, that's, let's see, for 24, yes, 76.5, so I'm sorry, not quite 77, and that's significant in two ways. One, It obviously, if you're behind on your retirement wealth creation, this is the ticket to get a lot more money into the pot than your IRA would be. This is with a self-directed 401 trust, otherwise known as a solo K. That is the marketing term, which does not appear in the Internal Revenue Code at any point. A trust created, or qualified trust rather, created pursuant to IRC 401, that should be read as Section 401 of the Internal Revenue Code, does in fact qualify for assorted benefits, including this, what I think of as an ultra high contribution level. And in the world of the Roth contribution, it's pretty much dollar for dollar. Now, you do have to gross up on your payroll check to yourself. Now, this is for a self-employed scenario, or you and your spouse counted as the single employee that can be full-time. You can have part-time employees, 1,000 hours or less a year. But in any event, to actually be able to make a $76,500 contribution, the gross up would mean a check somewhere in, I believe it's the $86,000 range to cover the FICA and Medicare components. But in any event, compare that to where if you wanted to actually write off the $76,500 amount, you would have to net self-employment income somewhere, and again, I don't have the new year numbers in my head, but somewhere in the 200,000, maybe 205 level, because you get, depending on whether it's a sole proprietorship or an S-corp, you get either 20 or 25% of your net income is the amount you need to be able to contribute on a pre-tax basis and get a deduction. Now, I'm going to ask you, if you're 60 years old, as an example, and you realize that the IRS life expectancy tables have you going out if you're male, 85 to 86, if you're female, 87 to 88, do you really think getting a little measly write-off? I mean, this is the problem with the 401 and the IRA to begin with, is the government, and I think big business welcomed the 401 concept back when it came into being. I believe it was in the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. That gave them the ability to offload the retiree conundrum, as it were, off to the individual worker. Think about that. You know, how many defined benefit plans do you see these days? Do you work for a company that pays you based on your years of service and how much your earnings were at a certain point? Or do they pay you at all? Do you simply get your 401 distributions? Now, they may have made contributions to the 401. I don't want to make it sound that crass that they really didn't care, but trust me, it's nowhere near the cost and the obligation of doing a defined benefit plan. And yet, you know, you could argue that's why we're in trouble with a lot of our public pension plans. You know, the police, firemen, not necessarily in the city you're in. I'm sure your police and firemen are worth every penny that you taxpayers will have to fund. I know we're fortunate in Houston. But in any event, defined benefit plans have gone by the way many years ago. And the problem with the 401 and the IRA is that government convinced us, put a certain amount of money in each year, take a small tax write-off one time. You only get it one time on each contribution. And then later, you don't pay the tax until later after it's grown and, you know, gotten much bigger. That's the pitch. What they're not telling you is, yeah, and so is their take, their share. Because who's a partner with you on that plan? Every dollar you take out, who are you paying at least 30 cents to? if not more, and it's only going to go up. What do you think happens when these tax rates go up that I keep barking about? You're going to pay more on the distributions you take out of your 401. The government collects more unless you say enough, I'm doing a Roth conversion. I'm, you know, Mr. and Ms. Government, I'm going to pay you what I owe you now and never more to pay you again for my retirement accounts. And I can say in most cases, even forget about the fact that I can save you even more money by consulting with you on getting your money over into these real estate private partnership syndications. Let's just assume you've got your money in the stock market and, you know, bonds, mutual funds, index funds, etc. You're going to save money over the long haul when you start taking those RMDs, required minimum distributions, when you hit 73. Who knows what that might change to, that age. You're going to pay a lot more than if you were to start taking distributions today. Why? The math. The tax receipts have got to go up if we're going to continue to borrow like we've gotten accustomed to borrowing to buy all the nice things we want and to pay for all the wars around the globe that we inevitably are the global police officer, and we fund a lot of that, billions and billions of dollars on almost every skirmish that takes place. And so again, the Roth conversion is your ticket. And you know, the folks at Schwab, they're all looking at the here and now. That's the least of your worries. The bigger worry is what's coming. And by converting to Roth and simultaneously investing in these real estate private partnership syndications or other private companies, you get huge discounts on that amount of money that you're going to have to send to the IRS for that Roth conversion. And we like real estate. We like the fact that everybody needs a place to lay their head down at night and that we can buy an old apartment building, make it nice, and pull all of our money out or most of our initial investment out in a matter of several years, still own the property, and then sell it in 7 or 8, 9 years and make a nice gain. And in any event, sounds like we're at the end of the show once again. Enjoyed it as usual. And I hope you got something out of this other than heartburn. Let's hope you got something to take action on. Fill out our forms if you want to have a phone call, and be happy to learn more about what you'd like to do and see if we can help you. We'll be back on Sunday, 7 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEB.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.